and Steve Quayle. We're going to leave a little room tonight to talk with Stephen about Giants, but back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, you seem to have an incredible knack for current events and for predicting some of the outcomes from some of these. How do you do that?
Well, I believe literally it's my calling. By the grace of a living God, I've been trying to warn, as you know, for a long time. But I say a man's gift makes way for him, and a man has nothing except he receives it from above. That's a funny way of saying it, maybe to a lot of people. But the thing is that I understand cause and effect. I understand history. And because of the amount of data that's out there, especially in ancient history, I'm kind of quoting the book of Ecclesiastes. There's nothing new under the sun, George, for that which has already been, will be. For instance, let's get into the Giants right now.
Oh, you want to? Okay.
Yeah, that's because I think it's important. I think it's pertinent. I think it's relevant. And I think people better realize this stuff is going on. Now, here's how I'll give you a little background on a story. Remember the situation where either Israel, the United States, or somebody bombed the Syrian supposed reactor?
Right. We think it was Israel, but I've been hearing reports that we might have been involved with that,
right,
too.
Well,
you've heard that, right?
I've heard that. Let me tell you a fascinating subject. The idea of that a bomb would open up, or that multiple bombs would open up underground caverns where the remains of the Giants were, and when I say the remains, I'm not always talking about just skeletal remains. One of the most famous Russian world-class scientists just took an expedition to Syria after the bombing, George, and they found some of the most remarkable items. I was privy to a conversation that took place in a European city, won't say where, between one of the foremost, he is the foremost Russian investigator of Giants. He took medical doctors with him. He took biologists. It was an unbelievably well thought out expedition / excursion. Well, my personal friend of mine was briefed in a European city on the meeting, and I'm trying to get, you would have to use a translator, but I'm trying to put him in contact with you guys because he's a fascinating man.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Good.
But to make a long story short, they found absolute proof of footprints that were anywhere from 36 to 42 inches in length, actually up to 4 feet in length. And by the doctors and the anatomists that were present, they said these guys had to be 12 to 18 feet tall. They're reported to also have found, get this one, live genetic material. Now, let me propose this. When Michael Crichton wrote his book, Jurassic Park, he was the first one to bring basically the reanimation of a suspended form of life, either dinosaurs out of the amber, whatever, to reanimate pre-existent creatures. Now, you and I both know that that's in the news now almost every day, some form of genetic alteration, genetic manipulation. So Dr. Muldashev, Muldashev, sent me the photos through a friend of mine. And what they are is remarkable. So when you ask what I've been up to, the thing that I'm trying to do in the Genesis 6 Volume 2 book is that we're going to put into that book the account that I read on your show, and your show was the premier reading of the event where remember the pilot that flew the dead, real giant out of Afghanistan?
Right, I remember that story.
Well, the point is now is that we've got enough expeditions going on, and there are multiple expeditions, so that what I call the devils that are, the powers that be, won't be able to contain it that much longer. It's my contention that the reanimation of Giants, who are known as long walkers, has already taken place. Now, before people tell me I'm out of my mind or what am I smoking, I want you to understand something. We're not talking 1,000. We're not talking at 10,000. We're talking hundreds of thousands of records relating to the time period prior to the creation of Adam and after that, where basically the Giants were the great builders of antiquity. And I don't think most people realize it until the time of Noah's flood that the oceans weren't oceans. They were giant, giant plains, and in many cases, Lemuria, Mu, Atlantis. People can blow that stuff off, but they just can't explain why there is a threat to every single myth, every single legend, and every single account leading to that. So the Giants now, imagine if you take the Jurassic Park and you have these entities, and by the way, they didn't, they weren't vegetarians, okay? They were humitarians. In other words, they liked the taste of human flesh. And when you're talking about this kind of stuff, and I just heard your commercial on Area 51 or the interview that took place, mm-hmm. there are places all over the world where they have genetic labs where the monstrosities that have been created and the monstrosities that have been brought back. What's interesting is Dr. Muldashev, when he was in Tibet, was allowed to go into a cave where there was a giant who, when I say a giant, they estimate him at 16, 18 feet tall, was in a form of suspended animation. And the monks told Dr. Muldashev that he could only go to a certain point because the giant emanated such a active brain pattern that it would literally destroy him. Well, he stepped 1 foot beyond what in the world of underground bases is called the red line, and basically he said he got the most horrific headache, like his head was going to explode. One of the monks grabbed him back and basically said, that's why we tell you not to go any further. But then follow this, George. About 3 weeks to 4 weeks, I think it was after that, a certain individual in the world that goes out and takes these things on told me about an incident in one of our underground bases in Dulce. And you know the story about Dulce in New Mexico, where some of the what I would call newer scientists who were studying the genetic makeup of these live entities got beyond the red line. The red line, I believe, is 14 feet. And there are a lot of people listening to the show that know this is not Bravo Sierra, that it's the actual thing. And they were absolutely, the guy said it looked like they had gone through meat grinders. They were shredded. And the individuals that were called in to have to put down the uprising in the underground base were the ones that are called when all this stuff happens. So when you're talking about this stuff as being far-flung and maybe too out of reach and everything, by the way, it wouldn't surprise me to see the History Channel or somebody, after you and I do a show on giants, invariably they'll run their show on giants saying, well, these were prehistoric dinosaur bones, blah, blah, blah. But point being is that there's too much stuff happening now. And I think it was one of the Israeli authors who wrote Return of the Giants. I can't think of his name right now. Barry Kamish. That when you're talking about the landings, whether they're in Moscow, Gorky Park, whether you're talking about the ones that are seen throughout the Middle East, it's fascinating that they always talk about 9-foot Nordics, as you know,
sure.
to 12-foot. So the bottom line in this is that we're seeing now contemporary events, i.e. a bombing of a suspected nuclear site in Syria, turning up ancient stuff. And the ancient stuff is turning up, for instance, Dave Flynn, just took a lot of Earth-orbiting satellite photos or had access to them of the Bolivian plateau above, in the neighborhood of Lake Titicaca. And most people don't realize that if you go back into the Incan, Mayan, Aztec legends, as well as the Paiute Indians of North America, they all refer to the giants that built their civilizations. And most people would be really aghast to find out that what they see on the pyramids of Giza is the pyramids, obviously, the wonders of the world. But underneath the areas that are no-go to archaeologists, we're talking about civilizations that predate the Great Pyramids literally by tens of thousands of years.
And what happened to the giants? Did they get killed in the flood?
Well, there were giants. The Bible teaches specifically that there were giants before the flood and after the flood. Now, think about this, and I want to make this clear. People will always send me emails after you and I talk about this saying, well, Jesus said in heaven they are neither given or taken in marriage, but are as the angels. These guys weren't concerned with marital rights. They were concerned with polluting the seed of Adam and Eve. Now, imagine if you've got a group of people out there that are concerned with the bloodlines, and when I say the bloodlines, whether they're the Merovingians or whoever, the point is that the angels, the fallen angels, basically got kicked out of that place in heaven that they occupied. So in essence, they got their wings flipped, okay? They come to Earth. They have a supernatural intelligence, a supernatural life force, and they're able. The fallen angels are not giants. Sometimes people get that confused. The fallen angels are able to basically size themselves accordingly, and I won't go into, let's just say this, the gynecological rundown of how it all happens, but the point is, is they came unto the women and produced the giants, which became the mighty men of renown, which the Greeks, every single civilization goes back to. Most people don't realize it, that obelisks and the men here and dolmens that are throughout Europe, throughout the world, they all go back to the same subject. In a way, it was the ultimate phallic emblem of the pollution of the human race. Now, follow with me. The flood comes, the great civilizations that preceded Adam and Eve are wiped out. Then, obviously, Noah and his family are saved. The Bible says they're saved because they were perfect in their generations. It means they weren't corrupted genetically, okay? They didn't have any second cousins. They were worried about who the father was. So then you come into the time period after the flood, and there's a second introduction of fallen angels. Now, in our day and age, that lineage, if you will, has been cultivated. I make the statement that the Human Genome Project was way more than what most people think.
Why so?
I believe that they were looking and have been looking in order to find the specific seed of the fallen angels and the humans, in other words, the seed of the giants, to cultivate that and basically to bring them back, reanimate them. And, for example, I quote, as you know, on your show many times, that the British Museum even talked about having DNA of Ramesses II, that they tongue-in-cheek said, of course, we don't intend to bring them back anytime soon. So the idea of reanimation of these things, and again, they weren't friendly giants. You'll love this. I was contacted by a Hollywood studio, one of the big three, and they asked me if I would want to write a screenplay for basically Casper the Friendly Giant. Okay? And you know, you would have loved that discussion. You would have just, I promise you, you would have been just blown, your mind would have been blown. And I said, well, that would be so far from history. And it was interesting because the lady who represents one of the top three directors in the United States said, well, it just makes it more fun. I said, man, what I'm talking about in history is not fun. So imagine if you take these abilities, George, supernatural strength, the ability of mind projection and all that, and you impose it or introduce it into a genetically altered human, what are you going to get? And see, again, one way it was sexual both before and after the flood. Now, isn't it fascinating, too, that every abduction pretty much that becomes prominent always enters into the realm of, what, sexual probing, taking the eggs from a woman, implanting something in the woman's womb, the aliens show up. I mean, this is just, I got to tell you something, this is kind of like almost too in your face to say, now, hey, there's too much relationship or linkage to the past.
And it is stuff that movies are made of.
And the reason why movies have been so ahead of the time is because, again, one of the ways historically, I believe there's a great X-File, Chris Carter did a great job on an X-File movie where they actually had a department, Area 51, that would come up with the most outlandish stories that they could pawn off on the public to get the public to believe. You remember seeing that
one? Yeah.
I love that. And the thing is that they leak the truth, and then by leaking the truth, people see it in the movie, and they automatically, because of the way the human mind works, they compartmentalize and say, oh, that's just science fiction. You follow? So they don't have to worry about it getting out. The best way to get it out is to allow it to come out, put it in the container of science fiction, then everybody says, oh, that's just crazy stuff. But again, that is what goes on. I once interviewed one of the most corrupt individuals on the planet.
Who is that? Can you say?
He was a double agent for the Central Intelligence Agency, okay?
All right. When you mean corrupt, he would kill, do anything?
Do anything. But he was also privy to, you know, he had the clearance necessary for the alien stuff. He's probably dead now. But the point is that he was going one time to, you'll love this story, he was going to a specific storage area that he had placed a lot of the stuff that he had, you know, collected over the years, especially what's on Mars. Basically, there's a place on Mars where they do more than smoke cigars, okay? And the point is that he was basically intercepted. I told him point blank, his name was Maverick. I said, and that was his name. That was his code name. I said, look, you're going to be bugged. You're going to be followed in everything because, again, the point is that I had wanted to talk to him about the proliferation of nuclear weapons. As you know, my contention is it's not who's building them, it's that they've got them already. But based on what you could buy on the black market, based on who this guy was, well, his knowledge of the aliens was unsurpassed. And fascinatingly enough, right when right when he was going to bring some stuff forward, they got him. But they needed him because he's the only one that could teach them how the money laundering of the world's elite took place. A little story from a reality of about 8 years ago.
Sure.
So what I'm able to do is I can't say, you know, well, people say, well, give me the evidence. And I'm convinced now, even with the evidence, the people that can't wrap their minds around this won't. And by the way, they'll have their evidence, okay? But the spin that's going to be put on the landing is going to be the ultimate deception. The aliens.
Give me a synopsis with this movie brain of yours. Give me a synopsis of how it'll be, how it will be told to us, what will be told.
Well, first of all, the bottom line is that the script has been placed into the hands by the powers that be to the different news sources of the world. And I'm not talking about like Katie Couric and people at her level, even though, you know, she's a prominent spokeswoman for the news. I'm talking about the higher-ups, the people that are going to be presenting it. So they're being briefed even now. When I say even now, I don't mean at this exact minute and hour, but it's now at this exact day. They're being briefed on how they're going to present it. They're going to schedule a series of events that, in essence, are going to control the forces of the hurricanes. And when I say they, the powers that be, the people that you and I refer to, that Alex talks about, are going to set up a series of extreme natural disasters. They're going to set up a series of events and basically they're going to bring the world to the weeping point. Now, it's not hard to do that. Think about it. You cut off all the money. Everybody's on the streets, those that are still alive, or everyone's battling each other. And this isn't going to be just in the U.S. This is going to be worldwide. And then you're going to have people saying, we knew this was happening, but for your sake, we had to keep it quiet. So then you're going to have all the TV and the fanfare, and they're going to present these guys as our saviors. And when I say saviors, they're going to be telling us that they created religion. They're going to say that they created all the major religions of the world, that basically Jesus is one of them. And the point is that they're going to get the whole world's, if you will, viewpoint shaken up. So it's going to be the ultimate intergalactic Hegelian dialectic.
And it's a plan?
It's a plan. I mean, I can tell you it is a plan, and it is in place, and it is playing out.
It seems far-fetched, even. My God.
But it's really no more far-fetched than what we talk about, because, look, if I control all the history of the world, okay, let's just say this. Let's say over the years that all the books in the Alexandria weren't burned up. But let's say I had enough money, enough power, enough influence that I could buy anything I wanted in the world, okay?
Yep.
And let's say I could control it all. This is beyond the realm of national treasure, okay? And let's say that there were a group of us that basically thought that by selling our allegiance or selling our souls to the powers of darkness, that we would be given this power to control it. So all of the finds, the archaeological finds, you know, from the time you and I first started talking about giants, that one of the museums in Lovelock, California, or in, I think, was one of the gold towns of Northern California, that a group of men came in and took that mummified remains of the giant, one of the red-haired giants.
You mean after our show?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that until about 6 months after that, and it disappeared. So the point is that, so follow with me, George. We have this group. This group has contained, controlled, and basically gotten hold of, by either intimidation, murder, or bribe, all of those artifacts. And they control how it's released, when it's released. And when something comes up that doesn't fit their plan for releasing the data or the artifact, they immediately begin to attack the messenger in their ad hominem attacks, dismiss it through their television attacks, or basically just get rid of the people, simpler like Phil Schneider when he was murdered, when he started talking about Dulcie on talk radio.
All right, stay with us, Stephen. Man, this is really a fast night. I want you to talk about your take on what you think is going to happen in Iran when we come back. Well, don't stay silent. Next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines with Stephen Quayle right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, have you heard that a handful of American generals will call it quits if we go into Iran?
Well, that's even been openly stated, yes, because again, George, when it comes to Iran, I look at Iran as the Persian Empire, okay? I look at Iran, not in the same context as most people. For the record, Iran is not an Arab country. Iran is the Persian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating is that if you're familiar with the prophecies of Daniel, okay? Now, here we have a guy that's writing a long time ago talking about the prince of Persia withstanding him. How this is relevant is a lot of the military is deep and steeped into different areas of the occult. You've got the ones that basically do everything on specific times, whether it's 333, all of the different derivations of the number 33, the 11s. You've probably seen a lot of stuff, and a lot of people probably send that to you on your email, the coincidences of the different timing.
Sure.
For instance, when we just had the last lunar eclipse that we had on the 20th of February, if you take 220, a friend of mine pointed out to me that if you go to the book of Acts 2:20, it talks about the moon turning to blood, the sun turning to darkness before the day of the Lord, okay? That's when God and Satan battle it out on planet Earth, and we're all going to be part of that. But what I'm saying is that Iran is fascinating, because when you look in the Old Testament prophecies of Daniel, that was the only empire that could stand, so to speak, to be able to even resist the Archangel Michael, and then finally Gabriel had to come. Now, people say, oh, that's all hogwash. Well, what's fascinating is you've got now the linking up in Iran as one of the end-time players in what's called the Ezekiel 38-39 war, Gog Magog. And what's becoming even more prominent is the fact that the nations in antiquity that changed their names in modern day are now, even Ahmadinejad and others are talking about the great empire. Ahmadinejad made the statement, what, either today or yesterday?
Today he did that. Today being Thursday.
Right? Yep, and I'm sorry. Today's Friday. Right now it's Friday.
It's Friday where most people are now.
Yeah, help me, George. I mean, I can tell you what's going on in the world, but I don't know what day it is because I don't care, and I know that sounds bad. But, you know, the point is that the Iranian situation is there's more going on in Iran in the supernatural realm than I think even people realize. Let me give you a good example. Last week, my guest host, his name is Hawk, the gentleman that takes my show for me on Thursday night, they picked up transmissions. Now, what they're doing is perfectly above board and totally legal. They were listening in on just a standard high-frequency radio. And what was happening is a P-3 Orion, you would obviously be aware of that.
I've been those. Those are our anti-submarine planes.
Off the East Coast encountered a Russian bomber 120 miles off the East Coast. The P-3 was begging the person that was at a specific, I won't name the specific one, but one of the air control monitors to send help, that this jet was coming in fast and furious. And if I'm not mistaken, it was one of the backfire bombers. It was not a TU-95. Hawk said on the air, and he basically said for 5 minutes he blasted the Pentagon at not, in essence, the woman who was the woman controller didn't know what to do. Understand, we're talking about a potential nuclear incident, and she was panicked, not knowing what to do. So Hawk was on the air, and at the time, within five minutes of defining the threat, basically it was a hot coming, they called it a hot bogey incident, okay? And that the door was wide open, military talk for we're in trouble. And the point is that within 5 minutes, everything on the East Coast lit up, and we were scrambling jets like mad. To put it into another perspective, I believe that we have basically let our guard down. How about the admiral that still, and I forget his name, maybe you know his name, that's the head of the Pacific Theater, you know, PACCOM, the admiral that said, oh, the Chinese are friends, everybody, this isn't a big deal. Ask yourself this, how one of the most expensive, technologically superior warships, the Kitty Hawk aircraft carrier, and all of the other support craft could miss two Russian bombers until they basically flew over the deck? Does that not seem a little strange?
Yes, bizarre.
Bizarre. So, George, what I'm telling you is within the last week...
Was that Gary Roughhead?
No, I don't think that's it. Maybe if somebody knows his name, you could email it to me or George. So, but this man absolutely seems to be clueless. So here we've got the situation going on. What I'm trying to set up is another one of my, if you will, scenes in the movie. You've got the Russian bombers, Tupolev 95s, which, by the way, are nuclear, and which, by the way, basically are just, quote, harassing the U.S. Navy. Everything that they do is penetrate. When a Russian bomber or any fighter goes over, the first thing they gather is the signals of any of the countermeasures being used against them. You know, they grab those signals, and then they basically jam those signals. So what people don't understand is that at the time that's going on in the Pacific, on the Atlantic coast, we've got someone asleep at the switch. We've got one of our sub hunters who is tracking either a Russian sub or an Iranian sub off of the East Coast, calling for help, get them up, get them quick, and going unlistened to. After that, we found out the day after that through just different sources, back channel, that a lot of heads were rolling over that. How can somebody who's an amateur ham operator pick it up who happens to be, a former amazing Cold War warrior, pick it up and broadcast it on a shortwave program, and the entire East Coast defense, the only guy reporting it's a Navy guy who's encountering it, and people aren't responding. Jeez. Until...
And that's Admiral Swinburne, I think.
Okay. Well, the point is that they, I think the JCS, Joint Chiefs of Staff, better call that guy in and have a little prep talk with him.
Yeah.
Because I'm serious. And remember, this isn't the first time. Several years ago was Russian fighters, MiGs over it, I think.
Well, do you expect an attack on Iran by the end of this year?
Yes.
You do.
I don't even know if we've got until the end of this year, to be honest with you. I think also that people need to realize that Russia has a defense treaty with Iran. And that's what is really, really important for people to keep in mind. I'm told through the back channels that Russia has made the statement that they will not allow their assets to be bombed. And if you notice, too, the rhetoric between Vladimir Putin and Bush, listen, it's beyond...
It's tense.
It's even beyond tense. I mean, when you see the fact that everyone now is perceiving that, look, going back to your question the first hour, you feel like something's up. I don't know what more we could be told is up. And I said, if the living God were literally to write in the sky, your time is up, America, meeny, meeny, tekel, upsarim, the same thing that Daniel deciphered for the king of Babylon before he was destroyed, I think everybody would say, isn't that neat? Well, the point is that I don't think that people recognize the time. You know, I'm told, oh, you cause fear. No, I believe that. You and I have talked about this before. I believe that the love of God is the most powerful influence in the universe. And we're told, obviously, that people that believe that God is who he says he is and will do what he says he'll do, that perfect love casts out fear. And so when people tell me, well, aren't you afraid? I say no. And they say, well, how do you feel about causing other people to be afraid? I say, I'm not causing other people to be afraid. I'm identifying that which they're already afraid of. Because most of the time, George, I find that when the critics say, oh, you're trying to make me frightened, the people are frightened to begin with, and they obviously need to realize that, that's their problem. It's not the messenger that's the cause of the bad news. The messenger is only reporting on the bad news because people have been trained by the monkey mind machine called television, which is television programming. The point is that they absolutely... only think that reality is what comes out of that box, and it's a commercial for something, a new fashion, or Britney's new escapade.
Well, all right, we'll see. Stephen Quayle believes we will go into Iran. We'll find out sooner than later. Bird flu. They keep talking about a pandemic. I don't think there will be one. What do you think?
I think bird flu is the sleight of hand of the magician. I have been concerned, as you know, since the death of all the scientists, that they're working on other entities. Now, I'm getting reports daily of literally hundreds of people coming down with flu, different types of flu, that's putting many of them into comas. So I believe that the bird flu is basically, look at what we're doing over here, but don't watch what we're doing over here. And I think that we're talking about the most corrupt group of humankind hating individuals and entities, and I believe that it's beyond a quote bird flu. I don't think so, but I think, George, that with the chemicals that they're spraying in the chemtrails, and you know this, like you talk to people about chemtrails, mm-hmm. I guess 1 in 10 will admit they even know anything about it. Maybe that's too high. Maybe 1 in 1,000. Maybe coast listeners would be different. Maybe the people that listen to my show would be different. But most people don't even look up anymore. So if they won't see what's obvious, I always ask myself this question. If they won't see what's obvious, how do I get them to look beyond that? Like some guy says, there's nothing going on in outer space. Oh, yeah? What's his point? He calls it hogwash. Well, even a pig that's washed will show new spots, okay? So what we're trying to do is peel off, if you will, the veneer, take away the onion skins to get people to realize that there is a control, there is a power, there is a force that wants the destruction of the United States. And I got to tell you something, I love this country. I love what it was. I don't love what apathetic, indifferent, and silent individuals have sat back to watch our freedoms and all of our gifts and blessings from the living God go away, you know? Look, I really believe America is beautiful. I don't believe that we should basically just sit back and acquiesce to these guys. But I also know this, that human beings, based on the history I know, don't get it until it's too late. And that's what my fear is in the Pentagon. And, oh, by the way, there are wonderful people and there are some devils. And unfortunately, the devils and the wonderful people are going at it full time.
Well, you might be right about that, Stephen. And we're right in the middle of it all the time.
All the time.
What do we do about it? Let's assume everything you've said tonight is going to happen.
Right.
What do we do?
Well, I think that what you do first is you've got to get to the point where you see the events unfolding and start to put them into perspective. Before World War II, you remember when Neville Chamberlain made his infamous statement, you know, the Germans are friends, there won't be war, blah, blah, blah. It was called the Doctrine of Appeasement. And I think that there has been such an unreal 7 years getting everyone lived off of their mortgages or their second mortgages or refinanced. Everybody had basically, and I'm saying this, the country as a whole before 2008 was doing pretty well until the summer of 2007 when the first talk of the housing crisis started to rise. And I think I can look back on Coast to Coast AM's page, but I don't remember when the last time you and I were on together before it all started crashing. Then it started snowballing. And remember the famous words from the mouths that be said that, well, this will be contained. This is only going to affect adjustable rate mortgages. But they forgot about the derivatives. Here's the bottom line, George. You can take it right to the bottom line, skip all of the economic models, all of the projections. There is too much debt in the world. And when everyone has sold debt that no one else will buy, that's when the house of cards comes crashing down. And quite candidly, when you're hearing about Citibank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, some of the banks in this country won't even cash $400 checks for people.
And they're restricting how much cash you can take out of an ATM now.
Yes, and also, and by the way, that's because they need their reserves to cover their, let's just say, their arrears. They need their...
The derriere.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I was trying to
that's
say.
That's the word you want.
The derriere, okay? And so point...
You don't use that in Montana, do you?
No, we just
you just come right out there.
Yeah, we're just out there, you know, just cover their behinds. But the point is that Bank of America, one of the biggest stories, I put it up as a story of my day, is that they're denying now people with good credit the ability to buy specific high-dollar items on their credit cards. In other words, the title of the story is Bank of America won't let you access your money. A guy had good credit, wanted to go in and buy a new home theater system, wanted to put $5,800 on his credit card, and he had $10,000 in the bank, and the bank wouldn't let him charge. And they danced him around. Basically, people are noticing when they go to use their credit cards that they're being cut off.
Stephen, just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, can I just say this? I think, George, I think the sea is rising, and all the metaphors you try and use, you try and liken it to this or liken it to that, and unfortunately, the metaphors don't work. Titanic, everybody saw the movie, the biggest grossing movie in the history of Hollywood, yet nobody gets it, you know? And when I say nobody gets it, the band plays on. Now, people ask me all the time about the stock market leading economic indicators. I call them lying economic indicators. The stock market is what people focus on. So with all the bad news, how can the stock market go up? Easy. The people that print the money give the money either digitally, and that's what it's done. Basically, it's just a computer entry into the big brokerage firms. The big brokerage firms buy stock index futures, so they're able to make it seem like the market's going up. Meanwhile, the stories, I mean, the heartbreak that's out there is overwhelming. Single moms, single dads, the veterans, you know that. That's my hot button. And by the way, thank you, because the last time we were on the radio talking, you and I together, when we were speaking of weather wars and weather manipulation, we were able to, we were only going to give out 200 books. We ended up giving out 400 books to veterans.
Oh, that's great.
And some of the stories, George, I mean, these men and women are heroes. I mean, they would send me pictures from the battlefield and everything. And I'll tell you, I wept when somebody said, thank you. No one's ever given me anything in my life before. And these guys gave all. You follow me?
Yep.
I mean, it was hard. And I just wanted to thank you because that was so cool to be able to get it in. But getting into what's going on in this country, now you've got the veterans being absolutely, I believe this, they're being identified as a non-class of people, okay? If they've had PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, if they've ever had depression, good night, depression is the order of the day, they can no longer acquire firearms under some of the new legislation. So you got to put this into perspective. We can give them a gun to go kill bad guys, but the good guys can't have guns because they maybe suffer from depression. And see, this is the incident that I'm talking about. When right is wrong and wrong is right, people have to have a compass. They're losing their direction. And when GPS goes down, I'm telling people, they'd better look north because the north is coming over the poles at us. Today, for instance, I got an email early in the morning, 5:30 my time, 4:30 your time, and they were talking about all the jets being scrambled out of a specific base, I think in either Idaho or Washington, maybe Fairchild. But the point is when you scramble a dozen to 18 jets and they're going on full afterburner, then that's not an exercise. Something's up. So what Putin is doing is he's saying, you're in our backyard, meaning the United States. We're obviously putting our radar missiles into Czechoslovakia.
Sure.
And everything. And the point is that now he's saying, you're in our backyard, we're going to be in your backyard. And he's coming at us and instituting a policy. And the point is that you say, okay, why do you want to...
it's like Cold War again, isn't
it? Yeah. Basically, in Montana, we want to, you don't go poking a grizzly with a sharp stick, okay? A bear comes out of hibernation. There's a good metaphor. This bear is out of hibernation. And again, we had an opportunity to, really make a difference. Unfortunately, we just exported our form of financial nonsense.
Well, Stephen, give us your website. We're going to take the break at the top of the hour, then we're coming back with phone calls.
Okay, my website, www.stevequayle.com, and that's spelled Q-U-A-Y-L-E.com, stevequayle.com. And if you'll go on the part, George, I want them to click on my link that I put up all the stories for you. Everybody that's listening to the show must go and read that story about fear and the Pentagon and the chemicals being sprayed. It's absolutely imperative. The most important story of the year, in my opinion.
All right, stay with us. Stephen Quayle, our very special guest, as he just mentioned, his website, stevequayle.com. Ours is coast2coastam.com. Send me an email anytime you want at george@coasttocoastam.com as well. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls in this one of the rapid nights of the year. We'll be back.